From the KTO Newsroom, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins with this news update. The grandson of a top campaign supporter of Governor Mike Dunleavy was the only person who could provide economic development advice to the state for $8,000 per month. That's according to Tom Boutin, who hired Clark Penny's company for a no-bid consulting contract for the state's economic development arm, the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. Penny's grandfather, Bob Penny, spent $300,000 supporting Dunleavy's election. Sitka Democratic Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins questioned whether to have a no-bid contract when there are many firms in the state that work in economic development.
I think that's what's been problematic for a lot of Alaskans and certainly me, because when government does a no-bid sole source contract, it's basically saying only the person this contract for has the skill set or expertise for what we're looking at. And in sort of the broad realm of economic development, that's quite a statement.
Boutin says paying roughly $400,000 over 4 years isn't much compared with other authority contracts. And he says no other firms would have bid for it.
We couldn't duplicate it for twice the money. And maybe there are people out there that would say we couldn't duplicate it for three times the money.
State officials say Penny has worked on projects related to mariculture industry, which grows marine life, international air cargo at the Anchorage and Fairbanks airports, and other projects under federal transportation. Amid the ongoing outbreak of the novel coronavirus, health officials are stressing that at this point, the risks posed to Alaskans are minimal. Answering questions on this week's Talk of Alaska call-in show, experts from the state and federal government explain what residents should know about the virus. Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes has this report.
So far, nearly 20,000 cases of the novel coronavirus have been confirmed worldwide, with more than 400 deaths.
The vast majority of cases and almost all deaths have been in China, and most of this has been in Hubei province in central China.
Dr. Jay Butler works on infectious diseases at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Butler says more than 200 cases have been confirmed in other countries, including 11 in the United States. There's still a lot that public health officials don't know about the new coronavirus. It was first detected about 2 months ago, and Butler says it's not clear yet how deadly it is compared to other upper respiratory coronaviruses from recent years, like SARS and MERS.
Based on the numbers out of China, the mortality is looking like it's just under 2%. And that may sound like a low number, but keep in mind that was basically the same overall mortality as the 1918 pandemic.
That's the influenza epidemic, also called Spanish flu, which killed an estimated 50 million people worldwide. It hit Alaska's indigenous population particularly hard, devastating Alaska Native communities. That history of susceptibility and isolation is one of the reasons a Talk of Alaska caller from Equoc named Jim said people like him, living off the road system, are especially concerned about the potential for disease transmission.
Some of the rural communities live in third world conditions, so you don't have no running water. Some of them are still using a hot honey bucket, and the housing is so bad some places that it's pretty bad.
While acknowledging the concerns, guests on the program stressed that at this point, the flu presents a significantly greater health threat to Alaskans than coronavirus. So far, the state has no suspected cases. All passenger airline travel from China is routed through just 11 U.S. airports. None are in Alaska, although Seattle SeaTac is on that list. The Ted Stevens International Airport in Anchorage played a role last week in repatriating nearly 200 U.S. citizens on a chartered flight back from the Chinese city of Wuhan, which is the epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak. The plane stopped briefly to refuel in an isolated airport terminal that was closed to the public. Passengers underwent health screenings before continuing on to Southern California.
The area where these passengers were screened has not had any additional passengers go through it.
Dr. Ann Zink is the state's chief medical officer and says the repatriation flight was a one-time event with no similar operations planned. However, the North Terminal of Ted Stevens Airport is one of the CDC's 20 official quarantine stations across the country. But that's more procedural than it might sound. For years, the same facility has been equipped to handle sick passengers, keeping them isolated and getting them medical treatment should the need arise. Those are the plans, Zink says, that kicked into gear once the state was asked to handle last week's returning flight.
We were able to use a lot of the work that went into the H1N1 epidemic. We were able to use the work that had been done on Ebola and build off of those previous structures to be able to respond to this mission. And I honestly think it allowed Alaska to have a head start compared to most of the rest of the nation to being able to prepare for this novel coronavirus.
Though officials are still trying to learn what makes individuals most susceptible to the new illness, vulnerable populations like the elderly and those with underlying conditions appear to be the most at risk. The advice for how to keep safe from the new illness is to take the same precautions for guarding against the flu. Wash your hands frequently or use an alcohol-based sanitizer, cover your mouth when you cough or sneeze, and avoid individuals who are sick. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
And in other news, on Sunday, four children from Nunam, Iqua, said they were going to the dump just outside of town. They ended up 18 miles south of the village on the Black River, where they spent over 24 hours outside without shelter. When searchers from Scammon Bay found the kids, they reported the kids were not in good condition. KYUK's Greg Kim has more on the story.
Brian Simon and his team of search and rescue volunteers left Scammon Bay around 10:30 Monday morning. Snow machining along the Black River, Simon scanned the white landscape for any minute detail like he's trained to do. 100 yards away on the highest snowdrift, he saw something he said was suspicious.
It didn't look normal, it didn't look like anything. And then as I got kind of closer, I seen movement. I couldn't believe my eyes.
He signaled the rest of his four-man team, and they approached what they would learn were the four missing boys from Nunam, Iqua.
Right away, I looked for that little infant. When I got kind of close to them, I thought I only seen one kid.
That's because Simon saw just one mass, all four children huddled together. They had dug a hole in the snow about a foot deep, 3 feet in diameter.
And the infant was in there, and then that boy laid over the infant. And on his left side, a little older boy covering the draft. And that seven-year-old was laying right over them like he was blocking the wind.
They were protecting the baby.
Simon's teammate Herschel Sundown, a former health aide, approached the scene and started assessing the children. The oldest had on a pair of sweatpants that had become soaked. One of the boys was missing gloves.
I won't get an exact detail out of respect for the boys, because they're still in some critical condition. I'll just say it didn't look good.
They immediately got to work, slowly warming up the boys' bodies. They removed the boys' wet clothes and wrapped them in parkas the search members had been wearing.
One of the guys put a canvas tarp over us too, and we huddled with all of them, trying to give out some heat to them.
Sundown started peppering the boys with questions.
If they're able to feel us touching them.
They said they could feel?
They were able to respond.
During this time, the search team's leader radioed the Coast Guard.
And I want to say 15 minutes or less, we were able to hear a helicopter coming on its way.
The mission may have ended for the searchers, but for Christopher Johnson, age 14, Frank Johnson, age 8, Ethan Camille, age 7, and 2-year-old Trey Camille, the battle is not over. The Coast Guard transported the children to Bethel, where they're being treated for severe hypothermia at the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation. Still, these are boys who have already defied the odds. For one, Sundown says their rescue was lucky. They were in an area other searchers had already passed through without seeing the children.
It's just the angle that we came in, we were able to spot them. We didn't think we'd find them, but we did.
Plus, these are boys who survived over 24 hours outside, through the night, forming a human shelter for their 2-year-old brother to stay warm.
In all honesty, I don't know how they survived. The will to survive in these boys is amazing. I've never seen anything like that.
In addition to Scammon Bay, Local groups from Nanaam Ikwa, Alakanuk, Imonik, and Kotlik also participated in the search. Hooper Bay and Chivak were available on standby while the U.S. Coast Guard and National Guard provided assistance from the air. Alaska State Troopers coordinated the statewide effort that brought the four missing boys from Nanaam Ikwa in from the cold. Reporting for KYUK in Bethel, I'm Greg Kim.
And Governor Mike Dunleavy announced yesterday that he has appointed Lucinda Mahoney to be the state's newest Department of Revenue Commissioner. Mahoney currently owns a consulting and investment management business. Before that, she was the chief financial officer for the municipality of Anchorage. She replaces Acting Commissioner Mike Barnhill, who will step down into a deputy commissioner role. Mahoney will need to be confirmed by the state's legislature. And a supplemental spending bill released by Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy centers largely on firefighting and Medicaid cost. Supplemental budgets typically include unexpected cost. Dunleavy's request seeks $110.5 million for firefighting, including $16 million for potential costs through June, the end of the fiscal year. He's also seeking $263 million for Medicaid, of which $120 million would be state funds. It's 38 degrees in the capital city. You're listening to KTOO.